You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Hey, you're listening to Taking Back Monday. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I am Bo Dromiak.
And we're going to get right into it. Bo, tell us, what is your origin story?
My origin stories really began junior in high school when I started working in architecture. And being the nature of that practice of learning how to build and to design build environment, I started realizing there's this integration between construction and design, construction and architecture, that there's this connective tissue there that is often kind of overlooked. There's barriers between it. And I started seeing really early age how the only way you can actually better the built environment was through an integrated team leadership where people are actually working together, not protecting territories. It's weird because at an early age, I started seeing this more through experience, like, wow, why is that conflict happening? And then throughout my career, I put myself in these positions where I can learn more. I kind of got this appetite for wanting to know more of the macro pressures of leadership in our profession. And so I started putting myself and taking job opportunities that would put me in more different environments that would allow me to see the different perspectives. And by doing that, I actually started broadening my perspectives, which became ultimately the content for Craft Advantage, the book I wrote, and Super Architect, the one I followed, and my class I created called Success Empathy.
I think I love that this conversation is starting from that world of architecture, right? So as someone who, you know, is a total layperson when it comes to what it takes to actually create and build and build these beautiful structures that we all exist in, it would never occur to me that there would be any kind of like territorial managing or protectionism in that, right? I see that all the time in the corporate world, right? But we're not building something together literally. And in this case, you guys literally are.
Yeah, which would make you think that we'd be educated the same way. You would think that the College of Architecture and College of Construction would be one college, you know, and then
the maybe College of Building Things.
Yeah, exactly. Of a better built environment. You know, the reality is architects can't exist without builders. Builders can't exist without architects. But there is this weird territorial thing because culturally the educations are different. And as a result, you kind of grow up in one environment where it's ideas first, which you see typically in the academic world of architecture education. And then you look at, you would hear the term reality first or, you know, building risk first, whatever on the construction side. And so if you have two entities, groups of people educated that way, they don't start seeing the value the other team offers as well. They get too egocentric in their own profession. Yet at the same time, being egocentric, they're not fully appreciating how much they need the other. And so what I teach in Success Empathy is how we start have to appreciate other people's risks and roles. And some of the best questions you can ask start bringing a team together is, hey, what is your biggest worry on this project? You know, what's your biggest concern? What's your ideal outcome? What is your risk? Tell me. And then hopefully in that dialogue, both partners can start to say, wow, you know, I can help with that risk. You can help with my risk. And we can come together to make a really amazing project. That doesn't often happen, if at all. But bottom line, the thing is so amazing about different than accounting, different than law, different than medicine, architecture and construction are building things people live with for 30, 50 years, whether they like it or not. You know, you can go to a different accountant, But you're walking in that same office every day for many, many, many years and living whether it's a good design or a bad design. So it's like the impacts are huge.
Yeah, I had a friend who was an architect intern, right? And she was kind of complaining, this was many, many years ago, kind of complaining about her internship. And she's like, literally my entire job is to draw outlets and to decide where outlets go. And I looked at her, I'm like, that is like the most important job I could possibly imagine in an office building, because we don't have nearly enough outlets. And it is very frustrating for me. And we like had a conversation about changing her perspective. Yes, your entire job is to look at a room and put marks where the outlets are going to be. But that's for an office building and a white collar job where we sit on computers all day. You couldn't have a more important job. Maybe that and the air conditioning.
I am blown away by your comment because it is so amazingly true. The way we're educated in architecture is pretty much from a macro point of view initially, and we learn micro as we get into the details as in professional practice. Contractors are often educated from the micro view of risk and the logistics of building something, all very important, by the way. But ultimately, when you're designing a building, I'm talking about architect, the electrical engineers, electrical subcontractors, the contractor, all the huge entity of people takes to build a building, to design and build a building. Ultimately, people are living in that building for a long time, 30, 40 years. Our priority needs to be their joy in living in that building. That should be the priority, not territorial stuff, not like aesthetics over daily function. We want both. We want a beautiful building, but you want to have that outlet. And you have no idea how many times I've been in projects where outlets, it's like, where are they? What happened? Or why is the outlets in the middle of a marker board? What is going on here? You know, these things happen. Humans are building buildings, and the priority needs to be on those little details. So while I could appreciate her concern about feel like she's not doing anything, there is a balance in internships. There's really no such thing as a bad internship. You learn from all internships. But the bottom line is she does want to find herself in a place where there's also growth beyond outlets so she can become a more rounded profession. But your observation is real profound. Those outlets matter.
Those outlets matter, right? And after we had that conversation, I think her perspective shifted too, right? Because to your point about that, like, egocentrism of really seeing ourselves in that moment, in her internship, she was seeing it as, I'm not doing the things that I went to school to do. I didn't go to school to place outlets. I went to school to design beautiful buildings and to think about skylines. And from my perspective, what she was doing was so incredibly important. So if we can find ways to build the muscle of exiting our own ego and looking at how our small actions or big actions impact those around us, I think it's a really important conversation.
Well, it's huge. It's the driver behind my class success empathy, essentially. But also, the thing about every college is different. You know, every university has a different kind of culture to it. You know, ASU's got a great culture of always trying to find that balance between the skyline and the detail, the skyline and putting things together. No college, university is perfect, but the one, you know, the universities that focus so much on the skyline, they are missing a very key component of the education that is super important when you get out of school. So, you know, you want to find that balance. And one thing what's really cool for her benefit is that she's interning. You know, that internship gives her some professional practice. The one thing I like about what we do at ASU is simply we find balance always. We're always moving forward. I never see a place constantly moving forward, trying to find balance between theory and practice. The thing about it is that school's a small moment in your life, right? You really need to get geared toward the profession as you go forward and learn, get the confidence into that profession confidently. That's part of our mission, right? The other thing, though, is respecting roles. When you come out of school, you have preconceived notions from your academic experience. When you get into practice, all of a sudden you start seeing the silos that make up a lot of the all corporate world, the profession, right?
Yeah.
And you find yourself in a silo all of a sudden. It's like, wait a minute, I can't seem to interact or grow the way I want to grow. And so I talk about my first book, Craft Advantage, this idea of perforated silos, where we create a culture of or corporate organizations need silos. They need to be organized, but can't they be perforated? A culture that says, reach through any silo you want to, you know, do electrical outlets, do mechanical design, do architecture, construction, learn. Even if that's not your per se discipline, you can still learn. And guess what? perforated silos makes you start appreciating the risks of those in those other silos and those other locations. They start going, you are interested in what I do. And now also now I'm interested in what you want to do. And now all of a sudden the risk is starting to be shared or at least appreciated. Then what happens is teams become high performing and trust, you know, becomes that fuel for really amazing things and fun. Like architecture and construction, as an example, is huge fun. It's huge. It's hard as you can imagine, but it's so fun when the teams are high performing. And I actually think we save the world. I always joke about this. We can save the world if we can take that positive, trust-centered collaboration that you see in the built design and the construction and architecture world, what it takes to, and the owner world, what it takes to build that building. If you could take all that positive energy, put it in a bottle, everybody drink it, and we're just going to, it's going to be wonderful.
I couldn't agree more. And so I'm going to put out a hypothesis that it is our instinctual preservationist, you know, lizard brains back in the day when we had to hoard resources to survive, to silo and protect.
Yep.
So if that is my hypothesis, how do we start to build the muscle that allows us to see the world as a perforated silo rather than something we have to protect? Because obviously you started a class to start that. So how do we actually do that in reality?
One is having a conversation that we all come to the table with, like preconceived notions and biases that come from our culture, that come from our education, that come from our experiences, wherever they come from. And we have to first see those. The best we can is just ask yourself. And I give you a good example. After many, many years, and this is kind of hypothetical example, I guess, it's very common for this idea that architects don't like contractors, contractors don't like architects. It's that weird dynamic, even though they need each other. And it comes from the fact that there's not shared values or shared risks, understanding the risks. For example, when an architecture team produces low quality documents, they're are putting risk, added risk onto the builder. Well, obviously, if you put added risk on me, I may not like you as much. If you keep adding risk to me, I'm not going to be such a big fan. When the builder is taking this attitude that their risk is the driver for everything, and they're not going to even listen to ideas that might be betterment for the project and the client, then of course, the architect starts feeling like there's a barrier there. So it's all coming from essentially a lack of respecting the risk profile of each person and the goals for each person. So if in fact we can break that barrier a little bit, just for a minute, ask that builder, what's your biggest risk? The builder asks, what's the architect's biggest risk, biggest goal, right? Just have a light conversation about it. Break the barriers down so you can actually, it's kind of like anything else. You can't really persuade and kind of motivate growth if ears are closed. You know, you really need to make an effort to open ears and realize the architect needs to realize they come to the table with certain biases and inefficiencies and ineffectiveness, and they know it, and they need to...
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Fix that because that adds risk to the builder. The builder also comes the same way with their own limitations and limits and their risk profile and their property erosion concern and so on. Both entities have to hop over the fence a little bit and kind of appreciate that. But also one other thing is respect is earned, not deserved. So just because you're there doesn't mean you deserve the respect. You got to earn it. And so the architect, Craft Advantage, the book, first book I wrote, talks about craft declining the craft of our quality of documents and so on and meetings or whatever is declining. And as a result, it's increasing the risk profile for the contractor. Contractor they don't like risk. You know, they don't like profit erosion that comes from risk. So what do? They start finding ways to do the architect's job, fill that craft void. And then that starts creating more potential barriers. So one thing that drives everything, I know this may sound oversimplistic, but first, take a moment, and this is, you know, to understand yourself, ask questions, try to listen. The other thing for the profession of architecture is ramp up that craft. The quality has to be as high as humanly possible. And when our craft is so high, then all of a sudden the risk profiles change, contractors happy, owners happy, less change orders, everybody's happy, less barriers, less hardened silos, more perforated. Because once I know that you're committed that way, I want my silos perforated. I want you there to help make my team better, make the project better, betterment for the built environment, everything else, better profit, everything else. It all comes from that, I think. And that's what the intent of Craft Advantage was about and is about. And it's kind of that drives me because I've seen it. When you talk about origin story, I started seeing declining craft because I curated my, and I know I'm crazy, right? I mean, most people don't do this. I curated and picked positions because I couldn't help it. I had to learn about these things. So I'd find myself in these positions where mostly engineers, small architects, mostly contractors, small architects, whatever, in development and so on. I started seeing this removal of responsibility from the architect because of a decline in craft. And I was wondering, where is this all coming from? And I realized it's coming from the fact that architects inadvertently, they're not intentional. It's been starting since the 70s, losing our craft has slowly been dropping due to accelerated delivery of virtual tools and so on. So that sets a new environment that we're in right now. And why I write about it, because it's a big deal.
I think it's really important to not just sit here and say, oh, it's just because, you know, construction sucks, or it's just because, you know, this group doesn't do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, we have to have some personal ownership of this conversation, right? You make the first move to open the dialogue about what impacts them.
Yep.
Don't wait for them to care. Like, it's not that they don't care about you, but maybe it doesn't occur to them that they need to ask that question. So you make the first move to ask the question, what are your risks? What are your outcomes? Because the natural follow-up question is, and what are yours?
And you just nailed it again, because that component combined with recognizing that the design documentation and the process starts with the architecture and design team. That's where it starts. It doesn't start with the builder. It doesn't start with the client. You know, even though they have programmatic needs and so on, we deal with a very lot of complex projects in my firm. But the bottom line is, it's kind of like control. It's kind of like in relationships, do what you can control, right? Where you have certain control of your behavior, own your behavior, which means I'm talking to the whole profession of architecture. You have direct control over quality of documents. Direct. No one's in the way. No builders coming in, and generally speaking, and there might be some rare exception, messing up your process to craft beautiful documents. When those documents are well coordinated, well thought out, and integrated with the needs of the contractor, needs of the owner, wow. I mean, everything just gets simple, you know, in a highly oversimplifying statement, but gets simpler, gets more enjoyable. And the built environment gets better. So.
Yeah. If you want to take the most selfish view of this, doing it this way means that the vision that you put on paper becomes a reality instead of ending up with something you're embarrassed to say you designed.
Oh, you're killing me. That is exactly right. The more you do what we just described here, the more opportunities of realizing your idea exist. Because one, you're caring about, in the first book, I talk about whole building thinking and this idea of caring about the budget, for example. And caring about the risk of the builder. Now imagine you're designing, thinking about the budget, not just some image, right? And you're caring about this and this and this. All of a sudden, that design is harmonized with reality. Years ago, believe it or not, I'll come back to this. I got to finish the point. So when it's harmonized, the everyone aligns because it's all working together. There's a resonance there that's happening. And because you are caring about what they, you're caring about reality. That's the bottom line is there's a reality to the project. I'll share a real fast, quick story. I was a junior in high school or junior senior, I can't remember. And I was working for a firm and I was a gopher, you know, running around picking things up. I'd deliver documents to the construction sites. I would build models. I would draw. And so they saw me as, you know, that the intern really, right? So one day they were discussing an evening. I was there late working. There's a budget. They're talking about budget and projects and you know how tough it is to get these projects in line with the budget and so on and so forth. And so they thought they'd ask the child, you know, hey, what do you think about this topic? And I said something. It just came out. I said, reality lies within the budget. And the senior architect looked at me like, wow, I can't believe that came out of this kid's mouth. And he wrote it as a quote and put it on the desk. I thought, wow, you know, that was pretty amazing. But that's the truth of the matter. You know, architects and builders are building with other people's money. We're designing and building with other people's money. The ultimate disrespect to a client is poorly coordinated documents and poorly coordinated construction by the contractor. You're disrespecting the client. The client's coming to the table with the money. We have to have the ultimate respect by showing the ultimate craft, not just in delivery of the design, but delivery of the construction. That's why architecture and construction need to be together. Because ultimately, that's where the power really ultimately is for the future. And as we get into AI, AI is going to be a big pivot point in our profession about 10 years from now, probably. And I write about this in Super Architect, which is all about posture going forward with AI optimization and so on. The reality is AI is going to be one of those major inflection points in our industry when AI and machine learning can start doing technical drawings, essentially replacing the craft I described. When that happens, there's going to be a shift within the profession. That's going to change leadership. It's going to change how firms win work, how firms retain clients, how firms compete, how their whole business model is going to change. And that's conceivably 10 years from now. Maybe earlier. Machine learning is moving fast. So this idea, the more unified, the less fractured the design profession is, and the more unified we can be with construction, with shared values and respecting roles, good manners, that's how we just take huge advantage of AI and move forward really in an amazing, exciting way, I think. So it's all connected.
You know, considering the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be listening to?
Well, I think I don't know if it's much listening as reading, although you could probably listen to them. I look at, I'm a big fan of knowledge, you know, reading everything, all sorts of things. My favorite architect is Norman Foster, because if you read I won't go into his history, but if you watch, he's from the UK. He did the Apple headquarters as an example. He understands that almost like I almost would joke, having never met the guy, at this molecular level of art, passion applied with precision and engineering excellence harmonized with construction. I've loved his work from day one. I've been fascinated and just very motivated by it because no one else really in our whole profession that I can see looks at it like that. They kind of lean one way or the other. He looks at it as an integrated approach that, like I said, I think it's molecular. I think it's just the way he is, an amazing person. One of the things with the mistake architects make, I think, is we got to start paying attention to all these other architects you don't hear about, really. There's a whole bunch of architects that are not so-called famous, but doing major, profound things. It's almost like we need to lean away a little bit from the shiny architecture. And not that we shouldn't respect it and enjoy it, but look at some of the other things going on, advanced manufacturing and all the other semiconductor world and all those amazing things happening there. The other thing I'd recommend a book to read is a book called Toyota Way. It is amazing. There's another book I'm reading too called The Innovator's Dilemma. It's an older book done in the early 2000s, I think, late 1990, whatever. The Innovative Dilemma talks about this dilemma within our business model of innovating that could be potentially successful or a failure, but the priorities you have to determine at risk and why you're running really fast. Toyota Way, though, talks about, you know, Toyota came up with this kind of big observation, and I can only imagine what they were thinking. What they said, wait, wow, if we were to, when we have our loading dock and a crate lands on our loading dock, it moves 10 times before it gets to its location. They decided we're going to streamline our whole industry, our whole kind of operation, where we're going to try to make that crate land one time. And so it's not being moved 9 more times. That reduces safety issues. That reduces, that increases profitability and allows, when you look at it as a, on a macro scale, more revenue for them hiring the best talent, having the best technology, having the best integrated systems, the best processes. So the reason why I mentioned that is that architects can't look just at, we have to look at the business models of high performance. You have to understand that the philosophy of the business operations and optimal business processes ripple into architecture. That's, our clients are often coming from that background. The more we understand that, the better we will be at delivering and growing our profession and working with the builder. Also, you'll learn a lot about how to run your own practice. You know, so those are some recommendations, some ideas. So,
and Beau, if someone is really connecting with you, they want to follow along, they want to learn more about your work as a thought leader or as an architect, where can they find you online?
We have a website, dromiakinvention.com, and one word. And you can email me at bdromiak@invention.com, at dromiakinvention.com.
Amazing.
So I think that's, yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on Taking Back Monday. Thank you for helping us rethink about that whole building philosophy and how we might be able to apply that to our own experiences. This was a really unique and interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me. Moto Casino.
America's social casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.